Are you a business owner looking for real advice and input? You're in the right place. From concept to launch to growth, funding, and beyond. Welcome to Startup Hustle with your hosts. One once sold a business for $150 million. The other, the author of Million Dollar Bedroom. Here are your hosts of Startup Hustle, Matt DeCourcy and Matt Watson.
Back. Another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here with Anurag Patel, who'll be sitting in for Matt Watson today. Anurag, what's up?
Not much. Today's a great day here in Kansas City.
It is, man. And I appreciate you coming and sitting in for Mr. Watson, who was called away to parent-teacher conferences. Of all things that every parent wants to do on a Friday morning. So, Anurag, you're the CEO and founder of Helix Health, and for those of you listening, you know I like it when you're interactive, so grab your phone, open up a browser, and go to helixhealth.us so you can see all about what this fine gentleman is doing. Now, before we get too far into this, you also were a participant in the Pure Pitch Rally.
I was.
Yeah, and you were a big winner from Full Scale.
I was.
Yeah, so
one of the biggest winners.
The biggest winner. And if you scroll down in our podcast feed, there is an episode that said 50K giveaway. And what we did at Full Scale was here in Kansas City. We participated for the second straight year in the Pure Pitch Rally, which is a pitch competition of sorts. And there's eight companies, but we gave away quite a bit of stuff.
More than 50K?
Actually, yeah. We did that last year too. We went to go give away 50 and we gave away 70, but we gave away 60 this year. And your company, Helix Health, was the grand prize winner and recipient of $15,000 of development credit from Full Scale. Congrats, man.
Thank you very much. And we really appreciate your support.
I appreciate what you're doing here in town. And we're going to talk a lot about that. And, you know, when it comes to that stuff, I guess I'm supposed to say, and I have made it all the way this far in, this episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by FullScale.io. So, all right, Anurag, let's get started with you grabbing this mic and giving everybody what was your pitch the other night? You know, what that would be a great place to start.
Yeah, so Helix Health does healthcare analytics. We look at large populations. So we're a big data company. We look at the data from a clinical, which is an electronic medical record, or a claims, which is your insurance company. Their data, and we try and analyze which people in the population are likely to not get the maximum treatment from their protocol. Meaning, if your doctor prescribes you something, are you likely to take it? And if you're not, then what can we do to intervene earlier?
And that could be anything from like medication to other stuff.
Yeah. So think about, so we work in chronic care conditions. Diabetes is one of them. Asthma is another, hypertension or high blood pressure. But generally speaking, these are things that people live with for a long time. It's not like you got sick and you need to go fix it and then you're fine after you get sick. But when it comes to, like, say again, diabetes, it's not just medication, but it's a whole host or a whole, protocol of things that you may need to do. Medication's easy. Someone tells you to go take this.
Take it three times a day. Yes. One, two, three, right.
And I say easy.
Which, by the way, is for some people still difficult to keep up with.
I was just going to say. Yeah. But like I say easy, but it's not necessarily easy, right? When you start adding many medications or you have many different conditions that you have to deal with, then things start getting a little bit more complicated. And especially if you're not necessarily fully educated on what you're doing, why you're doing it, and when you need to do it, then it becomes a little bit more difficult.
So you use the example of diabetes, and diabetes is obviously has different types, and the most common are type 1 and type 2, which can be quite different. But so when you talk about maximizing your routine or your whatever you need to do, for example, type 2 diabetes is something that you can almost create within yourself as an adult, I believe. And it has to do with, I mean, I don't know, you can also kind of get rid of it too. Like, but the isn't the routine like about also like about what you're eating or your exercise or different stuff like that? Is that the kind of stuff you're keeping up with, or is it strictly related to like treatment?
Yeah. So going back to the types, there's type 1, type 2 diabetes, and they're, that's a generic. There's many different variations that you can get into, but thinking about it just at a high level, type one is more of the childhood diabetes.
You are
not necessarily born with it, but you have something that you start early on in your age of having to deal with diabetes. Type two is more of the acquired. You get it right in adult life.
And
yes, there may be a way to treat diabetes for some individuals. And there's a variety of different outcomes when it comes to treating diabetes. But when we're talking about diabetes, or when we're talking about what we're working on, is managing it. So if you have diabetes, we accept that individuals or people in our population have diabetes. How do we make sure that they're treated well so they don't have long-term issues, long-term complications, or other diseases they get because of diabetes?
Okay.
So most people don't die from diabetes. They die from another complication related to diabetes. And it's usually 20 years down the road, right? So you're not thinking about it when you first get diabetes in your adult life.
So how the hell do you do that, man? How do you keep up with that? Because, I mean, the thing is if you're looking at a person, then, I mean, there's a lot of data there. I mean, so how do you, by the way, I have been listening to Audible books about data science because I'm fascinated with it. Because I think everyone hears data and all this, and data is the most valuable thing on the planet all of a sudden. Yeah, but 99% of people that I talk to don't know a goddamn thing about data.
Yeah.
They think they do, and they think they understand the concept. But so I've been fascinated with it because some of it's like, you know, like, oh, this data is so valuable. But if you don't do something useful with it, it is just zeros and ones, basically. So how do you, you know, I've learned that you have structured and unstructured data, but how do you guys gather all this? And like, I mean, how much of it are you looking at? What do you know? How do you know what not to look at? And how do you make it useful?
Yeah. So I think when we, there was a lot to unpack there. First, getting the data. So a lot
yeah,
of this
sorry
data,
about that.
Yeah. So a lot of this data sits with our partners, right? So hospitals have a lot of clinical data. Insurance companies have a lot of claims data, which is the finances of healthcare. And we partner with our customers to have access to that data. Now, that data also is protected by laws like HIPAA and HITRUST. HITRUST is a more updated version of HIPAA that deals with the digital world and security.
But yeah, for those of you listening, HIPAA is a standard that exists for basically protecting your information and data. It's kind of healthcare's version of PCI compliance.
Yeah.
It's probably an easy way to dumb it down on some level, right?
Yes, there's protection in there, there's privacy in there, and there's the way to transfer it. So portability is another P in there. But that is the essence of HIPAA. Mm-hmm. And then HITRUST is just an added layer that was used for understanding how we do this in a digital space. HIPAA was created when there was little data used that was moved digitally. It was all more of the paper records.
Right. So how are you making sense of all that?
So we get that data, and some of it is structured and some of it is unstructured. I think the electronic medical records has helped build out an area where some of this data is becoming more structured over time. But then also technology makes it easier for you to just to open up an app, talk to your computer, and then that computer will just write in a free text area of your record or of a patient's record all this information that you wanted as a data scientist or as someone who wants to analyze data. So we have to manage both of those. When it comes to the clinical aspect of what we know, part of it is that is a trained model. So we build out models that are already trained by humans that we look at this data and know that there's this value associated with it. So for example, in diabetes, there's a test that physicians do or hospitals do, and it's called a hemoglobin A1C. There's also a blood glucose test. So these are two different types of tests, and they have values associated with them. And generally speaking, those values can be found in a structured portion of our data set. That makes it a little bit easier for us. What may not be easy is some of the symptoms that occur when patients are out of range. When they're feeling sick, those symptoms may be in a structured area of the record, and sometimes it's not. So we build out models to help us analyze that information. But going beyond that, we also look at how the data that exists in a record that may not exactly correlate or signify disease or signify an event can be used to help us build out predictions anyways.
Does that mean like, is that like just the little stuff?
Yeah. So
I had a friend that was diabetic. I mean, like insulin shots, the whole thing. And, you know, he would sometimes, you know, and he was my roommate for 2 years. And, you know, he would have, you talk about the little things. I'd say, how do you know? And he'd be like, oh, my muscles will tighten up a little bit. Like my legs get tight. And I said, well, what do you mean? He's like, you know, when you haven't, like you just, your legs feel tight and you stretch a little bit and then maybe you feel a little better. He's like, my body will start feeling like that. Is that like an example of?
Yeah, but let's take it a little bit farther out. So we don't just look at symptoms and we don't just look at what patients are feeling. We are trying to build out a model for the system of healthcare. So that is also what the doctors are doing, also how the system is working. So let's use an example instead, and not necessarily diabetes. But let's say you got sick and you needed to go to the ER. And we went to the ER today, which is in the middle of the day, Friday. That experience that you get for being treated for whatever ailment you have, that you're sick, should look totally different and will look totally different than if you showed up on a Sunday evening at the ER. And it's just because our resources are different. It's because how we act are different. What doctors are going to be in the hospital are different. And what their support staff is going to be is different. Where you may even be, we're here in an office today in the middle of the day, but on a Sunday evening, you might be a little bit farther out from a hospital. So we account for all of those factors to see if we can help build out a prediction on the likelihood of an outcome. Not necessarily if you have diabetes or not, but if you got treated for your diabetes, what is the outcome based on the environment? So the little things in that system is what we're also looking for as signals. And it's not necessarily just one thing, but a combination of things. If you showed up as Matt on a Sunday evening at an urban hospital, this is the likelihood that you would be able to get your medication on the way out.
Okay. So is the beneficiary of this intended to be both the patient, the provider, and the insurance company?
Yeah. So our direct customer, our direct beneficiary is the hospital and the insurer. Our indirect is our patient. But this is built for patients. We want better health outcomes.
Right.
We also model for financial outcomes, so the cost of care. We acknowledge that to have people act a certain way on a system, we have to build out incentives, or someone has to build out incentives. So we want to make sure that we can match an intervention with how much it's going to cost or what kind of resources are going to be used behind that intervention. But the goal is always for better patient care. So I think you asked me a little bit about our pitch at Pure Pitch. And one of the things that I stated there is we exist because we believe that everyone deserves good health.
Right.
And I think that we can do better. So we can do better health outcomes. We have a ton of money in the healthcare system here in the U.S. We should be doing better.
So, and I do want to talk about the presentation the other night in a minute, but a couple things. So you actually have a background in medicine, which led you to starting this startup.
Yeah, indirectly.
Right.
That's not where I was intending to go.
Sure. I think 90% of the people I know that have a startup on some level started it accidentally. It might not have been, that might not be the best way to put it, but it kind of is.
Yeah. I mean, so I grew up in St. Louis, but I actually on the way here passed up one of my childhood homes. So early on, I want to say when I was in kindergarten, our family lived right here on a small house in on Ward Parkway.
Okay.
But eventually we ended up moving to St. Louis and I went to elementary school, middle school, and high school there, and then came back here to Kansas City to go to medical school at UMKC. But I didn't pursue a residency and didn't practice as a physician. I ended up looking at a number of different opportunities to try and see if I could solve some of the problems I had in medicine while I was there. Didn't know that's what I was doing exactly when I was starting down that process, but I went into research, went into healthcare administration, and then also eventually ended up working in startups to figure out what technology looked like for healthcare.
Right. And that's actually where I've been exposed to you over the last, I don't know, year or so, is you are a very active participant in our local startup community through the Kansas City Startup Foundation and other stuff. So that's fair to say, right?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. So the other night at the, and you know, the Pure Pitch Rally is interesting. Did you go to it last year?
I did not.
Okay. So you were flying blind into this thing on some level. Now, I think this is interesting. And it's definitely topical because, so you had to apply to this.
Yes.
And you were selected from a pretty large group of companies. And there's a lot of stuff like this out there. So I want to structure this around, we'll let you tell the story of that. But there's a ton of stuff out there that can help move your startup forward and stack up some interesting resources for you. But you have to take the initiative to get involved with these things.
Absolutely.
Right. So what made you want to, or how did you even find out about that? What made you want to sign up for it?
I think this is one of those valuable parts of being in Kansas City. We have a great network.
We do.
Where we help support each other. We help engage each other. We help educate each other. I think that is an incredible asset for the ecosystem in Kansas City as far as startups go, small businesses go, or even just the education around tech here in KC.
Yeah.
So as far as like, getting to know or being aware of Pure Pitch, I'm not quite sure exactly that moment, but it had to have been through a colleague or another friend. I also lean on my team, so there's four of us in Helix, and I think one of the individuals was asking me, hey, do you know about Pure Pitch and should we be doing this? And I said, oh, I do know about Pure Pitch and I don't know when the date is, but we should be doing this. And that's how the ball started. But yeah, we had to put in our application. And I think from there it was just a whole selection committee. But
did they coach you did you catch any coaching on giving the presentation or anything like that?
We did. So yeah. After we didn't get any feedback or coaching before our application, our selection,
yeah,
but afterwards,
right.
Once the
finalists are selected, they, yeah.
Yeah. Our cohort goes through three different coaching / mini accelerator programs, but the first one was for on pitching. And then there's two more that are going to come after the Pure Pitch Rally.
In the past, so this was the fourth year of this, but in the past, they've actually had a couple of people that didn't make it past pitch coaching.
Oh, really?
Like, just like, hey, you know, like, well, because they don't want to put you up there. And we'll talk about that for a second, because, all right, this is a pretty exclusive event. It's invite only. And realistically, there's 200 people in that room, and it's a pretty all-star cast when it comes to our city. I mean, that's fair to say, right?
Yeah. There are people in government. Yeah. There's people in large companies. There's investors.
Media.
There's media.
Yeah. I was joking. I was like, we should get a few more photographers in here, because there was like 8 of them running around, like taking pictures and doing video and stuff. But the way this is set up, and I mentioned we give away we're one of the larger sponsors of it, and we gave away $60,000. We've given away, technically, in the last 12 months, we've now awarded $130,000 worth of credits either last year and this year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because we're that close to the event still. But so the other thing that they do is Karen Fenaroli, who's the sponsor, and she runs Fenaroli and Associates. Once again, 50K giveaway, if you want to go back and listen to the episode where she came in and talked about this. But she does a really great job of getting people that come in, and they are the, quote, sharks. And by the way, Watson wore a shirt that had a shark barfing a rainbow with a cat with a gold cowboy hat on it. And there's a picture of him with the Kansas City mayor wearing that. We will post that on Instagram. So go to @StartupHustlePodcast. I might just leave that at the top of the feed, like just post it over and over again, so no one has any hard time finding it. But
yeah, that shirt was awesome.
Yeah.
I especially appreciated the rainbows.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, he came in my office and he was like, so I've got my shark shirt on. And I looked at it and I was like, wow, Matt, you do you. But it was pretty funny. So with that, the quote sharks that come in, they all give away $1,000 cash, and they give it away after the pitches to the companies that they choose. And I think there was probably like 40 or 45 of them this year.
I think there were at least.
So you won quite a few of those checks too, didn't you?
We did. We won, I can't can't remember the exact number.
It was like probably 8 to 10.
No, it wasn't that high. I wish it was, but there were many. I think there were 3 healthcare related,
or right.
We'll put them in the same bucket. Sure. Even they're not startups. And I think there were many times when an investor got up and said, I want to do this, but I'm going to do that. I care about diabetes and Helix, but
they kept doing that. And I'm sitting there thinking, I'm like, wow, you just really got someone excited and then plucked that money right out of their pocket. I'm like,
there were a number of us that were like, oh yeah. Oh wait, no.
So the thing is there's some serious coin on the line here between even just what we gave away and those checks. That's $100,000 out there.
Yeah.
And so they go through and each person award, you know, says, hey, this is who we're giving the award for. Now back to the caliber of the folks that are there. I mean, these are people that own big companies in town. They're hitters. And with that, other guests. And now all of a sudden you are boom on a small stage with a mic in your hand with 3 minutes to talk about your stuff with some stakes on the line. It's not just like talking about it. And did you feel the pressure once you actually got up there?
I did a little bit. I think part of it is it's also a different type of pitch, right? So whenever we've done this in the past, or whenever I've done this in the past, you get visuals. So we didn't have anything that we could use as a PowerPoint to show.
So I said, you're on a little tiny stage with a mic in your hand. You don't have a pitch deck. You don't have an outline.
And then you also don't get a lot of time.
Yeah. 3 minutes,
you
man.
3 minutes.
It's like not much time at all, but it's also a freaking eternity.
Yeah.
Three minutes is a lot longer than you think it is when you're in that situation too.
Yeah. And I think our goal, at least my goal was, which I think I probably overcompensated too much because I didn't use all of my 3 minutes, but it was to try and cut out as much as I needed to say so that I didn't just keep talking about stuff and going over the 3 minutes. But yeah, it's really hard to talk about your company, talk about the landscape, talk about why it's an issue, talk about yourself. Talk about how people can help you all in 3 minutes.
Was the advice that I gave you prior to that, do you remember that, like a week earlier or something? I gave you the advice. I said, it's not an investor pitch. You have to tug on the heartstrings of these people.
Yeah. And that's what happened, right? Yeah. There were so many people in the room that were,
they don't care how you generate revenue. They don't care if you have traction. It's all about the heartstrings.
Yeah. Can they personally connect?
Can they connect to it? Yeah.
Personally connected with their younger youth. Lives, right?
True.
Their youth. I grew up on a farm, therefore.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that. Because one of the companies, Libby Martin at Calving Technologies.
Which is a new word to me.
Calving?
Yes.
Yeah. Us too. We were like, what the hell is this? But she won a lot.
Yes.
Like a whole lot. And we gave her a different tier of reward. We gave them $7,500, but it was to help cattle.
Yeah.
Like, and you know, apparently a lot of cattle during the birthing process die. You know, there's someone, but a lot of the people you talk about going back to their childhood, that's what I said. The heartstrings, like I grew up on a farm and this makes sense. I got it. Well, I saw our cow die. It was heartbreaking, you know, and just like, wow. Okay. Yeah. But yeah, so it's a different kind of pitch. But and now here's the thing is this year was better. Last year, there was a couple people that I don't, for lack of a better word, they kind of choked the presentation a little bit. Because it's a pressure spot, you know, like you're all of a sudden and you know, the reality is most people would rather die than give a speech publicly. My wife is in that boat. Like there is a bigger fear of public speaking in the world than dying.
Yeah.
And
I don't know if I'm in that boat, but I do dislike it.
Okay.
Speeches are a little bit harder than like teaching, let's say.
Sure.
So if I needed to tell a large group of people what I was thinking or tell them about our process, it's easier. But if I needed to like do a speech, it's a little bit harder because then you have to get in the minds of your audience, talk or think about how they relate to you or relate to this, and then meet them at that level. And sometimes teaching, I don't know if I necessarily do it that way. I try and bring them to what the content
it's also different when there are stakes on the line.
Yeah,
like when you're teaching, you're teaching a class and you're the expert, and you know, like it's different when like, okay, if I get this right and I really crush this, I might actually put a large amount of money in my company's bank account or something like that. And I think that just kind of dials up the pressure. You can tell when some people give the presentation. Now I always, like, anytime I talk about fear of public, I am not afraid to speak I spoke right after you did, actually, a few minutes, and I had 3 minutes as well.
Yeah.
Same crowd. And, you know, literally, like, I didn't have any preparation for that because we didn't know who we were giving away money for to. Yeah. And,
but did you have anything on the line?
Yeah. Okay, I had 60 grand that we gave away. Yeah. And, you know, but not in the same regard, but I'm not a big fan of trying to memorize your speech. Because
yeah.
Everyone that gets caught, and you can tell they lose a spot, and then they're like, and that's because they're trying to replay the word for word and get caught up to where they were at. So I can tell that's what's happening. Anytime I see someone giving a presentation publicly and they get caught, they kind of get off kilter. And, you know, like my recommendation is think of like 5 words.
Yeah.
Those are your starting spots. So it's just like a set list for a band. They have like the songs written down and then they play them. So if you can, it's so much easier to remember 5 words than it is to remember a whole entire speech.
Yeah. I think I do poorly if I'm trying to memorize a speech.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I do better if I have like things or 5 things.
Similar. Say. Yeah. Yeah. And because that way, if you get off track, you kind of working your way down that list, it's way easier to put yourself back and not be like, because that 10 seconds, and you see that, see it happened to a couple of people, and it's the reality. But that's always my advice. And some people just, I don't know.
Yeah. I am excited and proud of the rest of our group.
Like, they did great. Awesome. They did great. Last year, the presentations were a little, there was a couple rough spots in there.
And some of the people, and I don't know if you, if it was apparent, but had never done this before.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them have never even done a pitch before. So this was a brand new thing to them. Totally.
Well, once again, congrats.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. You brought home some booty. But so, you know, some of the other stuff like Google gave away, like a suite of, you gave away like 20, you got like 20 grand.
Yeah. They gave away 20 grand, which is great because startups like ourselves, we start collecting a lot of these.
G Suite and just different stuff like that. You
know? Yeah. Cloud space or time. So I think it's both like actual space and servers on the cloud as well as like, time on the cloud that we get from Google. I think they just give us in credits and then we can use it however we want.
Won't use 20 grand worth because it'll have like a 2-year limit and you'll get through like $1,200.
No,
like,
we will.
Oh,
so we're actually building out our tech so that we can. We also got similar credits from AWS. Mm-hmm. That was something that we just finished right before Pure Pitch. So we were in the Amazon Web Services Accelerator earlier this year that finished end of September, and we went to Amazon headquarters. So I didn't, but one of our co-founders did and pitched to Amazon. And then we ended up winning third place, got a bunch of credits. But what we do is we do a lot of analytics. So a lot of the machine learning that we use to build out our models are very computation or compute
right,
heavy.
Right. And that's going to use a lot more computing power than like a simple software as a service platform or something like that.
Yeah. And so initially when we build out those models, it does take a lot of server time, and Amazon and cloud and Google Cloud are great ways to use.
Yeah.
That.
That's good that you're going to utilize that. I was talking to one of the, to Lauren Lawrence of Stenovate, who was one of our big winners last year. And I said, how much of that AWS credit have you used? And she's like, $500.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's a little oversold.
I think we will be able to use all of it.
I have a complaint with that because you give away 60 grand and then Google stands up and they're like, we're giving everyone $20,000. And it's not, I guarantee you that across all 8 companies, it will come up to, well, you might use the credit and then all the rest of the folks will be a little lower. So I continue to complain about that.
Yeah.
That's okay. I still think it's awesome that people are stacking that stuff up. And let's give a shout out real quick, because if you're in Kansas City, one of our I think it was episode 50, Startup Hustle alumnus Donald Hawkins has started a group called KC Collective, and they are here to help your startup get free stuff.
Yep. If you're a founder, you should go to kccollective.org, I believe it is.
Yeah, kccollective.org.
Apply.
And what they've done is they've taken the effort to establish relationships with places that'll give startups free stuff.
Yep. And I think beyond that,
there's a big list.
I was going to say there is a big list of perks, but beyond that, there's a great network. So I'm part of the collective, but just being able to get some of the educational programs that they put together, talk to each other. We have a network, a chat group that we can throw stuff out to, say, hey, I'm working on this, have this problem. Has anyone solved it?
Let's get back to machine learning and predictive analytics. Yes. And like, so this is something you hear a lot. I just got back from TechCrunch, and I think that every table we stopped at, my algorithm, that was our joke when we were leaving. Yeah. Like, no matter what, it was like, we were at the airport trying to decide what sushi we wanted. And I was like, I'm currently building an algorithm that will help me decide which sushi plate I want. Because it was kind of a joke, because like everybody is, was saying that. Now, machine learning is broad. Yes. It can be very simplistic, and it can also be remarkably complex.
Yeah.
So with what you guys are doing, you mentioned needing computing power in the cloud, that there's a level of complexity because there's all these comparisons and all this data and all this stuff. So for those that, let's talk just machine learning in general. What can you give us an overview of and how you're using it?
Yeah, so I think the way that we apply and discuss it in healthcare and the way that we leverage machine learning is a great knowing the differences would help as to why we would use machine learning in our
care. What is machine learning as you define it?
So
that's like 1,000 miles wide of a question, but
So I think there's ways, let's call them processes instead of even algorithms. There's ways to determine certain knowledge. When we've done this in the past, we meaning the collective we, and when we talk about healthcare, there's a very deterministic approach to understanding something, right? Like you want to look at a piece of data or a value and associate or attribute a knowledge or an insight to it. So it's easy whenever you're recording data in a very specific spot that's only recorded for that, right? So let's say blood pressure in this case. There's two aspects to blood pressure. There's your diastolic and your systolic, and those could be recorded in separate places, and it's very easy to make sure that you know what that looks like. At times, the algorithm or the process to understanding that could be very simple. There's a category, and this is diastolic, and whenever you have something in that field, then we could say it's part of blood pressure. In machine learning, I think there's, again, it's a category of processes that you can use to then maybe imply that there's something there, right? We're not saying that there is something there, but what's the likelihood that something is there? And so we're building out models that could potentially train themselves, that could build out knowledge. Now, of course, there are definitely human interventions at times. You want to have someone come in and say, is this model doing something correctly? But other times you might want to just do it for exploration. Can these models go look at the data and find something that is interesting, right? Like a signal within the noise. Is there something that is poking out that we didn't see as humans, but the data or the algorithms or the processes that we're using to develop can see it? And so I think that's a good way of looking at machine learning from our perspective. But then on top of that, it's how do we use it? Right. So most of the time, again, deterministic, meaning like if this, then that, is what we've done in healthcare. Can you tell me for certain, and I think we use two terms, sensitivity and specificity, for how do we put like the bumpers or the guidelines between our confidence in something, but how can you tell me something when this happens? Right. So that's like diagnosing diabetes. That's saying, hey, this is the treatment and this specific treatment caused this specific outcome. You could also look at it as a probability. So probabilistic modeling is a little bit different, saying, hey, can you tell me the likelihood of something, right? And we do less of that with our data in all sorts of areas of work, industry, but in healthcare specifically. And I think there's more people that are doing that though, right? We're looking at modeling populations, we're looking at modeling risk, we're looking at modeling the cost of care. So insurance companies do this a lot, and sometimes population health companies do this, and some of the more mature hospitals and clinics can do this as well. So that's the space that we specifically work in. And we have even a narrower spot than that. So we don't look at diagnosis. We're not trying to figure out if someone has a disease, and we're not trying to figure out the next step, which is how do we treat that disease? Is there a better way? But we actually look at a narrow space of like, how does that treatment actually get applied in the real world? And what's the likelihood of barriers being in place, access issues being in place, or even different qualities in different types of populations? So we build out probabilities. So what's the likelihood that these 20 people in this large group of 20,000 are likely to get this outcome if we put all these things in front of them? And I think that looks a little bit different, right? We as humans don't look at it like that.
Well, it's because we're biased.
We are biased.
And that's the one thing, and it doesn't matter who you are, like we all have bias, and machines are just purely analytical. They don't think about it. There's no heartstrings to tug at. It's data. And that can be a big advantage, and it can also at the moment lacks that kind of human, you know, element that can see around some of those corners a little differently. But
yeah.
So someone recently asked me what machine learning is. I said, it's computers looking for patterns and trying to predict outcomes.
Yeah.
So I know is like overly simplistic, but that's kind of what it is.
Yeah.
Too, right?
And that's exactly it. We're looking for patterns within the data. We're trying to see if those patterns mean anything. And we're trying to see if those patterns over time can tell us that it's the likelihood that this is going to happen as an outcome.
Right.
There's something else that you said that was really interesting.
That's rare.
Rewind.
That's rare. That's rare. That's rare. Well, you know, so in regards to why you hit rewind there, you know, machine learning. And so do you consider yourself a data scientist?
I do not. I don't have formal training in it. We have partners and we have data scientists to help us.
I think for those that want to get into tech that aren't programmers, now being a data scientist, it does help if you have some programmatic skills for sure. But you can get certifications in data science. Duke has one, IBM has one. And I know this because we employ data scientists at Full Scale.
Yeah, and Google has a good one too.
Yeah, okay, there you go. And there are, if you like math and you like crunching numbers and you're analytical, like you can, there's a lot of opportunity out there that doesn't require you to have 15 years of programming skills. But, and then on top of that too, if we want to kind of nerd out for a second, there are some programming languages that go really well with this. Like a lot of Python developers are trending towards R. Yes. R. And, some things like with AI and different stuff, I'm seeing C++ go through a total rebirth because C++ is it's been around for a while, but it was used a lot for embedded software applications. But now people are finding that it runs things like computer vision and different stuff in a really lightweight kind of way. So they can put it in things that can't necessarily harvest like ShotTracker, Davion Ross is like, they're trying to formulate data really quick, almost in like a real time kind of way where Python's too slow.
Yeah.
It uses too many resources. So they use different things. And there's a lot of interesting stuff.
Like, yeah.
I bet most people haven't even heard of R.
Depends on where you're at, right?
Yeah.
But like, I think R is more statistical. So if you're from an academic standpoint, background, then R is much easier to know that's what you use.
Yeah.
I think one of the interesting thing is over the last couple of years, though, both R and Python have libraries that work in machine learning and AI. And it's very quick that if someone creates a library in one, that someone's going to, the community is going to mimic and create the same library in the other. So I think that's been helpful in saying, hey, if you're going to work in one, it's pretty easy to work in the other. But there's definitely, I think, advantages of both of them. And many times we consider using both all the time. So there's,
right.
Yeah.
And Python has got, so we have a ton of Python programmers at Full Scale, but most of them are actually not doing machine learning with it. It has been a popular framework for software test applications.
Yeah.
So that a lot of that stuff is powered by Python. Python's good for automating stuff. So, and that is like on us that, I mean, a senior test automation programmer is, it needs every bit of experience that any senior developer has that's complex and different stuff. So it's fascinating. I'm a, I'm constantly trying to figure out anything repetitive deserves to be automated.
Yes, absolutely.
Because they're always the tasks that people are like, well, are machines and AI going to take over our jobs? They might take over the jobs that no one wants to do. I mean, for real, like data entry or just weird stuff like that. I mean, God, it's hard to find people to even want to do some of the things that that folks automate. So
yeah, and
do you guys use Python? And
we do. So Python and our core analytics languages. But then like how we get the data is different and how we present the data, our analytics is different too. They're not built off of R and Python. But something that you said, I wanted to come back to.
Did you find it?
Well, no, not that, but just something that you just said with automations and stuff. That's where we're going down the line of, right? Mm-hmm. Like we want to find efficiencies.
Yep.
We want to find ways to automate certain aspects of healthcare. And a good example of that is you mentioned medications earlier. So if we can identify 20, 50 people in a population that need medication, med check or med changes, then how do we reach out to them? Should we have a human reach out to them? That's how we sometimes do it today. Can we automate that process?
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't make sense if we keep finding one-offs like we do in healthcare today. So, today I need to call these two people or tomorrow I need to call. But if I could find 50 today, right off the bat, why not just find a tool that can automate that process? Find a tool that could figure out which of those 50 would prefer text messages, which of them would prefer email, and which of them actually need a phone call. Then the question is from even a human, because we have really great tools today. Scary Google.
Yeah.
That can call.
Are you talking like the AI? Dude, I was playing that for Breland, our show producer, when we were out in San Francisco, and she was like, wait, that's a computer?
Yeah.
Google it. The Google AI chatbot that made a phone call. And I mean, it's scary real.
Yeah. I think it's called Duplex, but yeah. On the back end was the tech side, but like from a
it's
consumer standpoint,
it's cool. It's cool. And also you're kind of like, whoa,
yeah.
Like, cause I wouldn't have known.
Yeah. I wouldn't have either.
And it really like it even does things like, it's like, hang on.
Yeah. Hang on a second. Or, let me.
Yeah. And I like how they really challenged it. Like they had the thing call, I think it was a Chinese restaurant, and the lady that answered the phone had a really heavy accent. I mean,
yeah.
I was having a hard time understanding what she was saying, but
yeah.
it didn't. And
it
figured
it
out.
Got,
it, yeah.
Yeah, it still got through all of the
and it threw it through a strange question. It was like something like, hey, I want to make a reservation for 7 people for Tuesday. And she was like, well, for what time? And for 5 o'clock. And she's like, okay, you don't need a reservation on those days when you have less than 8 people.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, so I can just show up at 5, so we can just walk in. You know, it's like, wow, like that's really
that
intuitive.
Really
and
good.
That's complex. That's
yeah.
tough, dude. That's tough. So,
so just caveat, that's Google AI. That's big AI. Right?
Yeah.
Most people don't do that.
Wait, we don't have the resources that Google has. So wait, Helix Health, which by the way, you can find at helixhealth.us. You're not working with those kind of resources yet?
No, not yet. Or not that. Yeah. Not that.
We need to get around. We need to fix that. I was another Startup Hustle alumnus, Neil Sharma, who's the founder of DEG. He owns a service company, much like we do at Full Scale. And I was talking to Neil about it. And, you know, why do tech companies have this just sick valuation compared to like a service company, which doesn't have the same? It's because software shows up to work every day. You talked about like, how do we notify people? Well, that's not very scalable, because if you're having to notify people, and then other things too, is like if that thing triggers all of a sudden, you've got like 1,500 contacts you need to make, that could take days.
Yeah.
And you can't just scale your notification team up to 10 people and then back down to 1. It's difficult. So that's where, and you know, with what you guys are doing, once again, I commend you for trying to do anything that lowers the cost of healthcare. I mean, Matt Watson was on Facebook today bitching about that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, both at Full Scale and at Stackify, we provide really great healthcare for our employees. And dude, it's expensive. I don't even go to the doctor. I think I would honestly be better off to just pay cash. Like it would probably be cheaper unless I get hit by a car or something like that. So, but
it could be.
Yeah.
I think part of the problem is that every time costs go up, insurance goes up, then insurance goes up, then prices go up.
It's something that someone needs to figure out.
Yes.
And then also too, like you mentioned at the very beginning, that everybody deserves good healthcare. Well, I feel everybody deserves healthcare too. Like, and figuring out a way to make that more affordable is going to make it a lot easier for, because I mean, what is like a quarter of the country doesn't have it?
A good portion, yes.
Yeah, it's pretty high.
And I think even more sad is, like, children don't have it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, in the end, like, I mean, it's just kind of a human thing. And, I take that global citizen approach. All right, so as we finish the episode, we have now named this the Founders Freestyle. So you get to say whatever you want, dude, and I'll give a quick reply, and then we're off to do whatever it is that we do. Talk about how you're going to use this $15,000 worth of credits. But yeah, the mic's yours, buddy.
Let me split it off then. Like, I'll tell whatever I
want
to say.
It's your freestyle, dude. You can literally rap right now if you want. I mean, it's up to you. It's a freestyle. I know I can't either, but it's a freestyle.
I'm super excited about the work that we do. I think that I agree. It's not necessarily just healthcare, but I believe everyone should get good health. Everyone deserves good health. Healthcare happens to be one of the avenues that we spend a lot of money in here at the US. I think that we could probably do better in that space. And we come in, we as Helix Health come in to fix a piece of that, which is that we can use data to build out insights to help the entire system be a little bit more efficient. And part of that, can we cuss on this?
Yeah, fuck yeah.
All right. Well,
especially during the freestyle.
So there's,
you can do whatever you want.
There's a couple,
you can literally like take over the station right now.
There's a couple of assumptions that we make is that we don't believe in shitty patients and we don't believe in shitty physicians or clinicians, but we do think that the healthcare system is pretty shitty and we need to fix that. And most people don't disagree with us or disagree with the idea that we don't need good health in the US. It's just how do we get it is like where our disagreements come in. And when we have a healthcare system that incentivizes break fix, which is if you get sick, then I will fix you and you can keep coming in so that I can fix you versus preventative care, then we're just not going to be able to move forward. And I think that's where we want to work. This is where we think that it's also scalable. There's a ton of data out there. There's a ton of ways for us to build out new incentives for preventative care, and I think the healthcare system's moving that way with value-based care. So I'm all for it. And anyone that wants to help, I would love to talk to them about it. I would love to help them with it. And I think everyone needs it. And I think even when you're talking about companies and your employees and people that you care about, you want them to be healthier. On the flip side, I have a question for you. What's up with this Voltron?
Lego Voltron. We took his microphone away. He usually sits right next to me. And for those of you that want to know what the hell we're talking about, we have a probably 1 foot tall.
I think he's bigger than that.
Yeah, it's close. He's about a foot. Yeah, he's huge, but Lego Voltron. So we, all right, I'm going to use Al Freestyle the reply on the way out. If you know me or you've listened to this podcast enough, you know that I have a weird obsession with Voltron.
It's not weird.
It's not weird because Voltron's awesome. So here's the thing is I believe in the power of a team. And I think that Voltron is just kind of a goofy and fun example. If you haven't watched it, they brought Voltron is from my childhood.
Mine too.
And they brought it back. They've got like 8 new seasons on Netflix, but Voltron consists of 5 lions that form together into one, the defender of the universe that has a laser sword and usually chops something in half with it. But each of these lions and their pilots have a specific skill and they're really great at something and they're pretty badass on their own. But when they get it all together and they work as a team, they become dominant. And, that whole, like, so we keep Voltron around to remind us of that on many days. But as far as Lego Voltron goes, Watson's kids built that out of that set. And so I have my own set and I'm like a third of the way through the Blue Lion after like a year. So Watson's kids did that in like half a day and crushed it. It is a complex and difficult Lego set. So yeah, and then to kind of finish off my freestyle, I'm going to go in a different direction and I'm going to encourage those of you that are listening to go out and find something to pitch your idea. Apply to accelerators, do things like this Pure Pitch Rally, and you can go to purepitchrally.com and learn more about that. Full Scale is also the development partner of Launch KC, which is another accelerator. Like there are a lot of things that you can get yourself into that there were 8 companies in this thing the other night. Everybody won something. Everybody won 20 grand from Google and at least 5 grand from Full Scale.
Yeah.
So even getting in, like think about that, the participation trophy here, was worth $25,000. And what could that do to change your business? And the answer is a lot. But the thing is, and I have this theory that the greatest album of all time was never heard. And I know that might be far-fetched and you can't prove whether I'm right or not, but in the end, you have to market and sell stuff. So when I say the greatest album of all time, there was someone that was like, or they didn't push it, or it didn't get promoted. It's stuck in a file cabinet somewhere. And, you know, maybe that's true or not, but you know, regardless of how much you despise public speaking or maybe even selling, that's your validator. Sales. That's how you're going to get more resources. Whatever it is, you have to get it out there, and it's good for you. It's good for you to hear the feedback. That's the main thing. And you're going to hear no, and it's good for you to hear no, because I don't care how great your idea is or who you are. You're going to hear a lot of no. Do you agree?
I agree. You're going to hear so much no.
I mean, dude, you can literally have 3 successful startups that you've crushed, exited from, you're half fucking famous, and someone's still going to tell you no for whatever reason. It might be them more than you, but you're going to hear no. It's just part of it.
And I know this sounds cliche, but I think that if you're not hearing no, then you're not doing it right.
Yeah.
Sure. I don't mean it in like a, you need to hear no, but
you need to hear no.
Well, it's the nature of the startup or the disruption or the innovation. It's new. And so most people don't get it. Most people don't see it that way. They're more comfortable with what's already going on. And so if you're building something that's new, a lot of people are going to say, I don't get it, or not know right now.
That's like the number one thing that, you know, people don't, it's difficult to get someone to invest in something they don't understand. And when you're doing cutting edge things or you're very visionary, you're going to hear way more now because people just don't get it. They don't understand the utility of it or a whole lot of different things. So I think in the end, and to finalize my freestyle and on behalf of Lego Voltron, because he knows that thing is pretty cool. There's pictures of Lego Voltron all over the At Startup Hustle podcast Instagram. So, and on your eyes, a little jealous. I think he's my,
oh, I am.
If Voltron is missing later, I know exactly where to come look.
I mean, that's why I asked you about it, because he's also part of my childhood. I grew up with
Voltron. Voltron's the man.
Transformers and Star Wars.
And Voltron is not a Transformer. We've had people point that out. He is not. He was first. He's like the OG.
Yeah.
When it comes to like transforming robot completing stacking stuff, I don't think there was one before him. No. And that also tells you how old we are. See you next time.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Startup Hustle with Matt DeCourcy and Matt Watson. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit startuphustle.xyz. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and subscribe. And we'll catch you next time on Startup Hustle.